that makes me know that we had the right idea in the beginning, and we just need to maintain our focus and elevate. We update our formulas. We have certain formulas, but we update them with the times and everything, you know. And so.
Hello, my basketball friends, and welcome to the Teardrop Runners, the weekly show where four old friends get together and try to learn something about the world of basketball analytics. I'm your host, Scott, a.k.a. The Walnut, in Baltimore, and with us as always are...
In Brooklyn, MBZ.
In Scott's apartment in Baltimore, Chris Breezy Brown.
We actually prefer to call it a row house. You know, it makes it sound more important. I realize that semi-detached housing is not living, in your opinion.
Yeah.
But nevertheless,
it's barely real shelter. It's kind of like living under a tree.
It's like a lean-to. It's the equivalent of a lean-to or a shanty. Not pictured today is Rob Schoberg. He was demoted for conduct unbecoming to the podcast, and he has been banished to the producing booth for now. We will keep you posted. Hopefully this does not turn into a full Keyshawn situation. Yeah.
Good if the commissioner can lift his suspension maybe in a couple weeks.
You know, in my opinion, Rob needs to learn his lesson. He knows what he did.
You know, I think the system isn't fair that they have to wait for people to go to New York to hear those appeals.
I think it's too fair. I think that there's too much due process given to people like Rob.
Right? Yeah, that's right.
All right,
guys.
God
can judge them.
So, Manziel, this is a basketball podcast. So our public service announcement is basketball analytics related. Manziel, what is that announcement?
Well, I discovered that My Synergy Sports, the video replay and stat tracking service, subscriptions are now available for the 2012-2013 season.
When you say video and stats tracking, what kind of stuff do they provide?
They provide some of the really detailed stats, such like when someone describes how effective someone is in the pick and roll or in isolation. Those stats are coming from Synergy Stats, where they watch the play and code it as, you know, what type of play occurred. Did the guy take the shot? Did he pass it? Did he make the shot, et cetera?
Right. So is it a complementary to the stats that we might normally see in a box score? Like, do you see an agreement generally between the video stat and Synergy Stats with stuff that we'd get in the newspaper or on ESPN or whatever?
Well, this is stuff you really can't see in the box score. You know, you can't figure out how well LeBron James does in isolation from the box score. So this is really a supplementary data, but it's also a much kind of more rich type of data that you can use to not only determine how effectively someone's playing, but how they're playing.
And also that they have the video packages. So if I'm looking at Kemba Walker, I can literally look at every Kemba Walker assist. They have video packages broken down that way.
Here's stupid question, but can we actually watch the game, buddy? Is this
can
a
you watch games?
Yeah, no. I mean, is this like getting NBA League Pass kind of?
You cannot watch the games. You'll only watch the video packages.
But it's the video packages from the game, right?
Right, but so they're only broken up by like statistics.
So they give you like plays. They don't give you the whole game.
Exactly.
You know, what'd be great is if a company made a program to give you the game from the actual Synergy Sports statistical package.
That would be great until that company was sued out of existence by the NBA 2 weeks later.
Well, you know, every one of these basketball bloggers would love to be able to watch a feed of the game where all it is play after play after play with no timeouts.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I think the NBA will hop that up relatively soon. I mean, the NFL already does, and I don't know. What's stopping? Probably just a little bit of manpower stopping the NBA from releasing those packages.
Yep.
I have to admit, it's watching NFL games like that. It's amazing how much dead time there is in an NFL game. Like a normal game might take 3 hours, plus hours, you know, and like the actual part where the players are running around and moving is like is like 15
surprisingly
minutes.
Surprisingly,
you know, it's incredible.
It's unreal.
You know, it's like an ultimate. They play games to 50 total points in 40 minutes of running time, you know. So even an ultimate, there's a lot of downtime.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Ultimate what now?
Ultimate disc.
Oh, okay. I thought ultimate was an adjective.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Okay. I didn't realize it was an app. Well, speaking of innovative tools, guys, one of the great new features at basketballreference.com are their heat charts. So they already had shooting charts, but if you look at a player's shooting stats now on Basketball Reference, they have a heat map, meaning, you know, sort of like it is an approximation of kind of an actual heat map where a player who's scoring a lot from that area, it looks red, and then as it gets cooler, it cools off to yellow and green, almost like a weather map.
Yeah.
Chris, you were taking a look at Carmelo's heat maps this week to take advantage of this new tool. Carmelo Anthony, that is, for those of you that are not familiar, he plays for the New York Knickerbockers.
Mm-hmm.
What do the heat maps for Carmelo tell us about how he's doing?
Well, he's having a great offensive year shooting the ball. His jump shot has improved dramatically over the last kind of three or four previous seasons. And what we can see from the heat map is that he is a very efficient scorer, both from shots taken near the hoop, which is similar to what he basically has always been very good at hitting those shots, as have most players throughout their career. But to this, he's added a great three-point shooting ability from beyond the break, and he's doing that on both sides, kind of both sides of the break. And so this is I think, you know, a kind of a graphical information that shows how Carmelo Anthony is having his breakout year this year.
Yeah, when you look at this heat map for Carmelo, you see a big red circle where the basket is, and you see two long red stripes along the above the break threes, and a little bit of a red dot right at the top. And, you know, how does that compare to even last year? I mean, it's pretty different, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, if you go back and look at previous season's data, you notice that he's not nearly as effective at hitting shots from outside, from all over the court. So his three-point shooting last year, his high shooting percentage shots were actually concentrated on the right side of the heat chart. And so that is similar actually to the year before that. So the 2011-12 season has a similar information. So it shows he really only hits three-point shots from a high percentage kind of on the right side of the court. If we go back even another season earlier, so the 2010-2011 season when he was in Denver, similar distribution from three-point range. So, you know, what we're really seeing, I think, is that this is sort of a great tool to show how Carmelo Anthony's game has improved and matured over the years. He's actually a more, I think, well-rounded player in that he's hitting at a high rate from three percentage range from both sides of the court. And, you know, that's kind of a big driver on why his plus-minus has improved so much this year.
Okay.
Yeah, he's definitely shown also like a mid-range baseline game that almost hasn't existed in previous seasons.
Right, he does.
You can see that just by looking at the chart.
Yeah, he does. He does have those little kind of, in addition to those big swaths of red above the break three, on the left and right block, he's got a little dollop of red as well.
I mean, the thing that's interesting is his mid-range game was always, at least judging by the heat maps, was always good on the right side of the court.
It was almost too good. That was the problem. He would take a lot of long twos because he was so good at making them from the right side.
Yeah, and now, you know, now what we're seeing is actually his offensive game is you know, he's really operating close to the basket. He's operating from 3-point range, and he's on the blocks on both sides. And so, you know, it looks to me like he has more diversity in where he's taking shots from, which I suspect would help him take advantage of different defenses that are thrown at him and defenders. He's more versatile right now.
Does that show up in his other stats, his non-visual stats? How about his effective field goal percentage? How's that changed over time?
Yeah.
You give our listeners a reminder of what effective field goal percentage is?
Sure. Effective field goal percentage is field goal shots taken from 2-point range plus shots taken from 3-point range times 0.5 divided by the field goal average.
So basically, it's trying to account for the added value of making threes.
Exactly. So, you know, you get an extra point from 3-point range. So this field goal percentage accounts for that. And what we see this year is that his based on numbers shown on 82games.com, if you look at Carmelo Anthony's statistics on that website, you can see that his jump shooting field goal percentage, effective field goal percentage this year, is 0.493. So for Carmelo, this is approximately about 0.3 to 0.4 percent points better than his previous three or four seasons.
This is a pretty dramatic improvement.
Exactly. And so he's really, and I think a lot of that is driven by, you know, as we see on the Heat charts, his shooting from three-point range. So he's basically gotten a lot better this season at shooting for three, and that's had a dramatic improvement in his overall effective field goal percentage from three-point range, or from jump shots.
Now, Menzel, you live in New York, and I know that you spend a lot of your time at the Garden watching these games up close and personal. It's your favorite thing in the world. Is there anything in Carmelo's game or in the changes that the Knicks have seen this season that you think might account for some of these numbers?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the absence of Stoudemire for basically the entire season has forced him to play a stretch four position. And what this does is it pairs him off against power forwards who want to protect the hoop and rebound. And so he has a little more freedom to get those outside shots.
Okay.
You know, unlike when he's matched up against a small forward who's going to shadow him anywhere in the court.
Menzel, or sorry, Chris, do you think that the stats bear that out, or do we see? I mean, you mentioned that the effective field goal rate went up this season from when he's been playing the three. Do you see any other changes that might represent the positive shift from going from a three to a four?
So, you know, as Menzel says, yes, he is playing the majority of his minutes this year for the first time at the four position. So he's always played, he's been able to switch between the small forward and the forward and the power forward position throughout his career. But this is a new thing that he's playing the majority of his minutes at the power forward. What you see, though, is that sort of both offensively and defensively, there doesn't seem to be a big change in his game. So, for example, he's pretty effective offensively from the three-point or from the small forward position as well as the power forward position. For example, his per numbers are, you know, 21 at the small forward and 23.8 at the power forward position.
And then per being the player efficiency rating, which is a sort of approximation of overall offensive efficiency, with 15 being league average and in the mid to high 20s being very, very good.
Yeah, and we also can see that his effective field goal percentage is fairly comparable at those two positions.
Okay.
The other thing that's interesting is that really defensively, you know, he seems to be equally effective at both positions. And that might be, by that I mean he doesn't seem to suffer much when he's playing the four.
Right.
On the defensive end of the court.
Right. Well, he is strong. And one thing, you know, I'll say just, I think an improvement that I see watching him is that he uses his strength better and better all the time. And I think he's drawing some inspiration from LeBron here and using his big frame. But I think people forget how huge and strong Melo is because, you know, he's had times in his career where he looked a little doughy. Last year he was accused of being fat. His trainer said it was just padding. But then, you know, and it may well have been, you know, he does wear kind of almost like a Kevlar vest or something under his
flak jacket looking thing.
Yeah. You know, his game as a power forward, is really deadly because he can just step back, get a little bit of space and hit from the left or the right block, that kind of 7 or 8 footer.
Yeah.
And it's just a butter. So
yeah.
He's a very fun player to watch this season. Course, unfortunately, he plays in the same conference as the Miami Heat.
Yeah, and this to me, I mean, the other point for me is I've always been somewhat critical of Carmelo Anthony's superstar status in the NBA prior to this season. You know, his plus minus has never been that good, you know, throughout his career, you know, while he was always considered to be one of the star players in the league. But this is the first year that I can really look at Carmelo Anthony's you know, what he's doing to help his team out and notice that, you know, he is really truly a superstar this year. He's very efficient. He's just an amazing scorer. And, you know, there's no, in my view, he's absolutely one of the league's best players.
Do you think we're seeing peak Carmelo, or do you think he can get even better?
That's a great question. I mean, my feeling is that this is probably peak Carmelo. I mean, the fact that his shooting, his effective field goal percentage is so much higher than previous seasons makes me a little bit concerned that he won't be able to sustain this moving forward. It would not be.
Yeah, so this. Yeah.
Go ahead, Menzo.
This is his age 28 season. So he's turning 29 in a couple months. So, you know, physically he's definitely, you know, right at his peak. I do sense that he could kind of pull like a second time around Michael Jordan, where he really gets efficient, and you know, when he loses in athleticism, he's making up for with like a deadly turnaround jumper, things like that that are already in his game that he could really really refine, and offensively just be very unstoppable.
Yeah, I mean,
he's pretty unstoppable right now offensively.
I mean the thing that I think is positive is that we don't see a change in his components. So, for example, his jump shooting hasn't dramatically increased over the last 3-4 years. So he's shooting about the same number of jump shots, you know, versus close shots versus dunks as he has throughout his career. But just his effective field goal percentage has gone up a lot on jump shots. And I think that, you know, that basically I'm not seeing any diminish his physical abilities aren't diminishing, and no. So my thought is that he may be able to, there's no reason why he won't be able to continue to play like this, you know, moving forward.
Well, he does take a beating though. He, I mean, the same way, the thing that I'm talking about when I say he uses his strength, I mean he uses his body weight well, the way he swings his arms up and under guys, he takes a lot of contact, and you know, you do see him breaking down sometimes. I mean, right, yeah. Now he's got to go back and get his knee drained. So
yeah, and he is. You're right. I mean, he's got a lot of you know, years in the league. He's played a lot of games. Yep. It wouldn't be surprising to see injuries begin to accumulate.
Yeah,
what were you?
He has never had a real injury, has he? Just these Knicks.
Yeah, I don't think he's ever had like you know, any torn ligaments or, you know, like major sprains or anything.
He's had pretty chronic ankle injuries though, yeah, I thought, yeah, throughout his career. So that's, I mean, yeah, that, you know, that's they're, I think basketball players these days are very good at kind of taking care of ankle issues. So
right.
So maybe they won't stick with him in the long run. That injury may not haunt him. But, you know, at the same time, you know, he's played an awful lot of basketball, so
yeah.
It wouldn't be a surprise if he got beat up, you know, and had to sit out more moving forward.
Right. Well, he's certainly, obviously, as Chris said, a superstar. That's pretty much beyond dispute right now. they did lose to the Nuggets this week, but of course that was without him and without a few of their other key players, including Tyson Chandler. Sort of an embarrassing loss, but they also lost to the Trailblazers, so that was fun.
Yeah.
Blazers, yeah.
Blazers, man, killing it.
Yeah, they are. Well, speaking of guys that are killing it, one of our favorite players on this show is University of Washington alumni Quincy Pondexter. Coupon, drafted by the Hornets, traded to the Grizzlies. You know, a lot of us wondered whether or not he was going to be able to make it in the NBA when he was in college. We all watched him pretty closely. Chris, you had season tickets back then, watched him right up close. Can you give us kind of a breakdown of Coupon's college game?
Yeah, sure. He kind of came in. He was actually famous for playing on a very, very good high school team. He played with the one of the two big twin centers that went to Stanford,
the Lopez twins.
Yep.
And I think for that reason, he garnered a lot of attention from scouts and collegiate scouts, and was thought to be one of the best players in this high school class. He was like considered to be one of the top 20 players, I think, in the United States the year that he went to college. And his, you know, while he had some very good games initially in his career at University of Washington, he was a little bit unusual in that he didn't meet expectations that people held for him initially, and ended up playing his full 4-year career at University of Washington. The thing that he was known for was just good defense. He's a long, kind of lanky, strong defender, and that was the case throughout his college career. He was a guy that struggled.
And just for the record, he's 6'6 and 225 now. He's probably about 200 when he was in college.
Yeah, so he played, yeah. He kind of swung between the 3 and the 4 in college. Even though, you know, now I'd say he's probably more of a 3 in the NBA.
Absolutely.
The thing that there are a couple things that he struggled with in college, and I think that he still, to some extent, is dealing with as an NBA player, is that his handle was never great. So he was a guy that had a hard time creating off the dribble in college. He also was inconsistent with his outside shot, and I thought that in college he had kind of free rein to shoot jumpers from outside as well as scoring inside early on in his career. But one of the main improvements that he made in college was kind of reining in his outside jumper, and to the point that when he was a senior, he really was more comfortable, I thought, slashing towards the basket or even posting players up, and would actually limit his kind of outside shooting to shots where he was essentially uncovered and had a player inside kick it out to him. Okay. So this, you know, what you did see though is in his collegiate career, he put in a tremendous amount of work, effort into building himself up as a basketball player, just getting stronger and like working on his handle and being smart enough to know that, you know, to minimize the bad shots he was taking and to, you know, maximize the number of times that he could put himself in a position to score efficiently.
Right. And when he was coming out, one of the other questions I had besides his shooting was, for a guy of his size, he does not get to the rim all that easily. He doesn't play above the rim a whole lot. He was able to score close to the rim basically using good positioning and smart play against players that were largely around his size. But when he got to the NBA, I think he found that it was very difficult for him to get to the rim, especially off the dribble, as you said.
Yeah, exactly. Like in college, he was a superior athlete, but in the NBA, you know, he's just another he's another small forward.
Right.
He doesn't have a, you know, any special ability, I guess, above the rim.
Right. Well, I took a look at his. It's interesting. You know, you mentioned that one of the knocks on him was as an outside shooter. Obviously, one of the things that Memphis needs is outside shooters. They've got their twin towers inside with Zach Randolph and Marc Gasol, and they're super dominant, but they don't necessarily score points all the time. And so they need guys that are going to be able to hit that three, especially the corner three. Well, the good news is when you look at Kupon's heat map, what you see is three big red dollops where he shoots well and shoots often, and those are from the corners and right at the basket. And that's reflected in his effective field goal percentage this year, which, I'm sorry, I pulled up last year. Let me pull up this year.
65 points higher.
Yeah, his effective field goal is 562, which is just tremendous. You know, I watched him the other night when the Memphis Grizzlies beat the Clippers in L.A. Quincy's grandma was there, and she powered him to a monster night. He had a ton of threes. He always seems to be in the right place at the right time. I think he's a very disciplined defender. Although, you know, again, he's not a super athlete,
yeah,
but he is disciplined. So, I'm liking what I'm seeing. Menzel, when you look at his stat profile, are you surprised to see the progress that he's made?
Yeah, I am, because, you know, I thought in college watching him that he was a guy I didn't mind taking 3-point shots, but, you know, he wasn't an unlimited range type of guy that you like to see in college turn into NBA 3-point shooter. And looking at his stats this year, he's shooting 425 from three, which is, you know, obviously a very good number.
Awesome.
And he has almost tripled the number of 3-point attempts per game. From previous seasons, he's doubled his per 36 attempts.
He has to. I mean, that
shooting more often and hitting them at a higher rate. You know, what more can you ask for?
Yeah, that's right. The thing, just things that are interesting are that I think that the trade of Rudy Gay might have really helped Kupon this year, because it's
helping him get minutes.
It's helping him get minutes. It's also, you know, taking a guy off the court that was a guy that used a lot of offensive possessions, and so. You know, on this particular version of the Memphis team, you know, they need a guy that can really hang out from 3-point range, you know, get the ball when it's kicked out and take those open jumpers.
That's right.
And I think he could be that guy. The other thing that's interesting is that one of the, you know, I thought characteristics that he demonstrated when he was a collegiate player was just discipline and knowing what shots that he could take and hit at a high percentage and what shots maybe to avoid. And when we look at his shooting heat chart, we see that this guy is incredibly disciplined in shooting from several areas of the court and largely avoiding shots from areas that he's just not as comfortable in. So it's just, to me, it's remarkable how many corner threes he takes and how many shots he's taking very close to the basket, and how few shots he's taking, you know, in other positions on the court.
Yeah, I mean, he is the consummate role player. I mean, that's the thing, is that he when he was in New Orleans, his adjusting to that new role of essentially being a guy that stood in the corner on offense.
Yeah.
He looked hesitant sometimes. You know, some people would call his shot selection judicious. Sometimes I would even call it a little too hesitant.
Yeah, yeah.
He doesn't have the. He's clearly doesn't quite have the confidence yet.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's just an absolutely, like you say, very disciplined player. One of the fascinating things I found out when I was just kind of reading up on him more this week is that when he was injured this season, he would basically just join the broadcast booth for parts of games and help break the game down to the fans. Obviously, he's got a tremendous amount of insight, and it also just shows a kind of a savvy on his part. Endear himself to the fans, make himself a valuable part of the organization, understand that he is a role player, and kind of offer whatever value he can to the team and the city. So we love you, Coupon. Yeah. It's great to see you succeeding, and I think Chris has another point.
Yeah, just one thought is that this sort of offensive distribution that we're seeing is very reminiscent of Bruce Bowen. I'd actually say that, you know, one of the things that may I'd be curious to see with Quincy moving forward is just how much more effective he can get on defense. I think that may be,
right,
you know, a way that he can make his mark in the league and you know, really advance his career. If he can just keep hitting and taking hit in these corner threes and then turning himself into a lockdown defender,
yep,
he may have, you know, very long and effective career in the league, even longer and more effective than you know, what he's doing right now.
Well, let's hope so.
Yeah. I would like to see him maybe rebound a little bit more as a big, kind of a bigger 2-3 guy, but
it's hard, though. I mean, you know, that he's not in a position to rebound.
But those two guys he's got in there.
Exactly.
Yep.
Well, all right. Good luck, Coupon, I hope that you're listening to this. We
wish you well.
Is Coupon sponsored, by the way?
On
it looks like
he's
not sponsored. Yeah, he's unsponsored.
I see.
$15 for Coupon.
Wow, yeah, that's price keeps that's dropping.
It's a steal. It's a steal. We got to consider it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, speaking of fun new tools, there's a new website called Box Score Replay. Some of you may have seen this if you read Deadspin. They reported on it. But what Box Score Replay is a it's a fun new tool. It was made by Ed. EDD, I think some professional software developer. And the progressive box score, basically, if you go to boxscorereplay.com, you'll see, for instance, last night's games. If you click on the Grizzlies and the Nuggets, you'll see an empty box score. It's everything zero. And then at the top of the screen, there's an orange box, and you drag the orange box along the top to simulate the movement of time. And then the box score fills up according to the play. It's a pretty remarkable tool. Menzel, have you had a chance to play around with this at all?
Yeah, I have played around with it. And I think the reason it was invented was for people like a lot of basketball writers or you know, basketball heads who are watching a lot of games after the fact because they've DVR'd them or they're watching the next day on League Pass or whatever. And there's a problem is you can't look up the box score without ruining the result of the game normally. So this allows you to pull up the box score. It starts at, you know, 12 minutes in the first quarter. And, you know, let's say you're only midway through the second quarter. You pull up your slider right there. And there you have a real-time box score without giving away anything about the future of the game.
Yep. That's a great point, and I'm sure that it is used that way. It's also a fun tool to sort of, it's another way to sort of visualize the statistics as you see the flow of the game. For instance, you know, right now I've got the game open from last night, the Grizzlies Nuggets game, which Chris and I watched. The third quarter was brutal. I think the Nuggets may have scored 8 or 10 points in the quarter.
Yeah.
But if you drag it along, what's remarkable is you just see all the points standing still, and the only number that's going up is Kosta Kufos's rebounds.
Some rebounds.
Rebounds and fouls keep going up. But the Corey Brewer finally scores with 3:53 left. It was an ugly quarter. So it's also fun in that way. Chris, do you think there are any other uses for this new tool? It's certainly fun.
You know, I really enjoy sort of just watching the ebb and flow of the stats in the game. You know, the thing that you don't get from the box score is how, if a guy starts out hot and then gets cold or, you know, do they stay consistent the whole game? And so it's, It's interesting. It was one of the box scores we're looking at. One of a player's name I don't remember, but basically he hit the first 4 out of 5 jumpers and then went 1 for like the next 9. Right. And you think that, you know, at that point, at various times during the game, that player was probably feeling pretty good about himself. And then, you know, later on, probably the reverse was the case.
So it's also kind of a self-esteem meter.
Yeah, exactly.
Well. That's fun. That's fun.
The other thing is that just that idea of taking a look at how things move during the course of a game, or, you know, can also be done during the course of a season. I like the thought of being able to see how players change, how well they play at various points in time. And one of my, you know, we can see, for example, that when we look at the heat charts, that Carmelo is a lot better, or he's shooting a lot better from 3 all over the court this year than he has in previous years. But if we're able to sort of combine this box score statistic or this way of looking at box scores where we can see how players evolve during the course of a game, it might be interesting to use that same way of looking at players to see how they evolve during the course of a season.
Right.
So, you know, is there some, you know, I kind of suspect that, you know, players at various points in time, especially young players, all of a sudden learn something new. They get a shot that they get confidence in, or they realize that they're capable of making a certain type of play, and then all of a sudden their game improves, or their shot selection diversifies, or their coach recognizes that they can do something and starts to give them plays that allow them to exploit it. But we don't actually see it. I mean, generally speaking, the two types of statistics that we've had access to historically are box score statistics or season statistics. It's difficult to basically get this kind of intermediate statistic, which allows us to look at the evolution of a player.
Right. Yeah, well, it is fun. It looks like it started this week, and it looks like he's going to be, you know, the program's running. So going forward, it's going to be a lot of fun. It's a fun way to kind of look back, like you say. If you want to look back at, you know, somebody gets Eastern Conference Player of the Week and took you by surprise, you can go back and look at their games that way. I think it's a really fun way to check it out. Certainly more fun than just looking at a box score. Fuck you, newspapers. I'm sorry. Rest in peace, Boston Phoenix. All right. Well, that's all the new content we have for this week. We're trying to keep it short since, Rob, it's very hot in the booth there. We're kind of we're hotboxing them a little bit, turn the heat up to 105, and it's not a yoga studio. So he's trying not to sweat on the console. We're going to let him out of there and go celebrate St. Patrick's Day. Whoop. So, you guys want to say goodnight?
Goodnight, everybody.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. And until next time, save us a seat at the next Sonics game. SonicsArena.com.
See ya.